Good afternoon, and welcome to the Women's Health Show. This show will be aired the second Monday of every month from 3 to 3:30 p.m., and my name is Nancy Rosenzweig. I'm the host of this program. Big news over the weekend has spurred the topic of today's show. According to the news, Beyoncé and Jay-Z welcomed their little baby daughter named Blue Ivy Carter into the world over the weekend, arriving via a scheduled cesarean section. The New York Daily News notes that Jay-Z and Beyoncé tried to tightly control the baby's arrival, rented out an entire floor of Lenox Hill Hospital on New York's Upper East Side. I won't begin to comment on any of the reasons why Beyoncé had a scheduled C-section. I know nothing about her case in particular, but just hearing about the scheduled C-section made me think about what is the rate of cesarean sections in the United States today? What are we doing about it? Why is it happening? And what do women and their partners really know about the risks and benefits of cesarean section? The International Cesarean Awareness Network, or ICANN, indicates that the C-section is now the most frequently performed major surgery in the United States. Recent studies reaffirmed the earlier World Health Organization recommendations about optimal cesarean section rates. The best outcomes for mothers and babies appear to occur when the cesarean section rates are 5 to 10%, and rates above 15% seem to do more harm than good. The national United States cesarean section rate was 4.5%, near this optimal range in 1965, when it was first measured. It may seem unbelievable to some that the most recent statistics from the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, have shown to be that in 2010, the national rate was 32.8%. With this rate, about one mother in three now gives birth by cesarean section, a record level for the United States. Most mothers are healthy and have good reason to anticipate an uncomplicated childbirth. Cesarean section is major surgery. It increases the likelihood of many short and longer-term adverse effects for both mothers and babies. And there are clear authoritative recommendations for the more judicious use of this procedure. So why does a pregnant woman's chance of having a cesarean section keep going up? To explain this steady rise, health professionals and journalists often point the spotlight on mothers themselves. Many assume that the leading factors in the trend are that more and more women are asking for C-sections that have no medical rationale, and the number of women who genuinely need a cesarean is increasing. But all studies show that neither of these reasons appears to account for a large proportion of the increase. In fact, in the well-known study called Listening to Mothers, a survey of women, when Childbirth Connection asked mothers who had had a cesarean why they had it and who had initiated it, only one woman among nearly 1,600 survey participants reported that she had a planned first C-section with no medical reason at her own request. You may have heard the catchphrase, too posh to push, but convenient cesareans really only appear to account for a very small fraction of elective surgical births. They have gained intense media coverage due to celebrities including Madonna, Elizabeth Hurley, Claudia Schiffer, all of these women who scheduled their deliveries via C-section. Some in the media conjecture that these surgeries were done because scheduling the baby's birth was convenient for the mothers, or these particular stars in question were hoping to avoid abdominal stretching in the last month of pregnancy. Whether or not the speculation about these specific mothers is accurate, there is a percentage of women who do elect to have a C-section because they want to control the delivery date. Another reason for electing a cesarean for non-medical reasons may be the fear of giving birth. Some women opting for a C-section somehow believe they will avoid long-term health problems such as tissue tearing, sexual dysfunction, or incontinence that can accompany or follow a labor and a vaginal birth. Although research does suggest the physical trauma of pregnancy alone can increase a woman's risk of bladder and bowel control problems. So before we go a little further into thinking about the reasons for the rising cesarean section rate, let's talk a little bit about how we term the different cesarean sections that do exist. First of all, there are planned cesarean sections and there are unplanned cesarean sections. In the planned cesarean section category, we have women who have a primary, that is their first C-section, as an elective procedure. There are women who have a repeat cesarean section as an elective procedure. And there are women who plan a C-section for very clear medical reasons. The most common medical reasons for a planned cesarean section would be an abnormal presentation of the baby. For example, when the baby's head would not be the first part of the baby coming out. It might be a breech presentation with the butt of the baby being the lowest part, a footling breech where a foot of the baby would be the first thing coming out, or some babies even lie across their mother's belly, which is called a transverse lie. And most babies in that position are not able to be born vaginally. Although it's possible for a baby in the breech presentation to be born vaginally, there are fewer and fewer doctors and midwives who feel comfortable. The less experience that doctors and midwives have doing breech births means that there will be more fear in the process and a less likelihood of the providers encouraging the women to go for a vaginal birth. The position of the placenta is extremely important. Placenta previa is a condition where the placenta is actually in front of the mother's cervix and makes it impossible for the baby to be born first. A placenta cannot come out before a baby comes out because the placenta is the source of all oxygen and food for the baby. So a placenta previa is a medical condition that requires the baby being be born through a cesarean section. Since twin pregnancies and other multiple pregnancies have an inherent higher risk in the birth process, most doctors and their clients are choosing to have a cesarean section for multiple pregnancies. Many women can give birth to twins vaginally, and many still do, but it's becoming more and more rare. Doctors are encouraging women to go for a vaginal birth. Typically, the unplanned cesarean sections occur after a woman's been in labor a long time, and it seems inevitable that the baby is not going to be born vaginally. We call this failure to progress. And what this really means is that either the cervix is not opening to its full dilation, which is about 10 centimeters open, or the baby is not able to descend through the mother's pelvis to be born through the vaginal canal. There's a lot of disagreement about how many of the C-sections in our country today have to do with a lack of patience on the provider's part or not waiting long enough for a woman to be able to progress through her labor. We'll also get to the discussion of how common interventions in the labor process today in hospitals might impede this progress of dilation or descent. Those C-sections are rarely emergency C-sections. They're almost always a decision that the medical provider and the woman in labor decide together after time has gone by. Emergency C-sections are really quite rare. They might occur because of some decrease in the fetal heart rate, wondering if there's a sudden loss of oxygen to the baby. It might occur because the umbilical cord has preceded the birth of the baby, and any kind of compression of the umbilical cord in this situation called a cord prolapse could have a dire effect on the baby's ability to receive oxygen. So what we call a bradycardia, this decrease in the fetal heart rate that is not coming back to its normal, or a cord prolapse, are two of the reasons for an emergency C-section. Another one might be that the placenta starts to come away from the uterus, again, taking away the source of oxygen for the baby. This would be called an abruption. Now, there's no argument that we are in a position today where we are able to save mothers and babies who may not have been able to be saved years and years ago. A cesarean section is a welcome operation when it's truly needed. But I think one of the discussions I would like to have today, and I encourage anyone listening to email me their comments or questions to info@wgxc.org. One of the issues today is that I don't really believe that women have true informed consent about what are the risks and benefits of cesarean section operations, and what are the risks and benefits of a vaginal birth. So let's go back to what may be the more common reasons for the rising cesarean section rate in our country. Some people have pointed to changes in the population of childbearing women, such as more older women who have developed medical conditions, and more women with the extra challenges of multiple births, which may happen as older women go through infertility treatments to become pregnant. And while there are some overall changes in the population, researchers have found that cesarean section rates are going up for all groups of birthing women, regardless of age, the numbers of babies they're having, the extent of their health problems, their race, their ethnicity, or any other kind of breakdown in population. In other words, there's a change in practice standards that reflects an increasing willingness on the part of professionals to follow the cesarean path under all of these conditions. In fact, going back to that survey called Listening to Mothers by Childbirth Connection, one quarter of the survey participants who had had cesareans reported that they had experienced pressure from a healthcare professional to have the cesarean. Our society is more tolerant than ever of surgical procedures, even when they're not medically needed. And this is reflected in the comfort level that many healthcare professionals have, insurance companies have, hospital administrators have, and women themselves have with the trend of current cesarean rates going upward and upward. Current research also suggests that some labor interventions make a C-section more likely. For example, labor induction among first-time mothers when the cervix is not soft and ready to open appears to increase the likelihood of cesarean birth. Continuous electronic fetal heart rate monitoring has been associated in almost all studies with a greater likelihood of a cesarean without a greater likelihood of improved outcomes in babies. Having anesthesia too early in labor, or without a high-dose boost of synthetic oxytocin may increase the likelihood of a C-section as well. Real care that supports physiologic labor, such as providing continuous support during labor through a doula or another support person, using positions like being on your hands and legs to turn a breech, reduces the likelihood of a cesarean section. The decision to switch to cesarean is often made when the caregivers could really watchfully wait a little bit longer, use positioning, use comfort measures, oral nourishment, and other approaches that could facilitate the progress of labor. And there's no doubt that given the way our legal and liability insurance systems work, many of the doctors and midwives who are the caregivers feel that performing a C-section reduces their risk of being sued or losing a lawsuit, even when they know that vaginal birth may be the most optimal care. The global fee method of paying for childbirth does not provide any extra pay for those doctors and midwives who patiently support a longer vaginal labor and birth. And some payment schedules might even pay more for a cesarean than for a vaginal birth. Women stay longer in a hospital when they've had a cesarean. Hospitals will earn more money. Many of these factors might contribute to this growing cesarean section rate. The Listening to Mothers survey also found that many women who had had a previous cesarean section would have liked the option of a vaginal birth after cesarean, which we call VBAC, but they didn't have that choice because the health professionals and/or the hospitals were unwilling to offer this informed choice to them. So that 9 out of 10 women with a previous cesarean section are having repeat cesarean sections in the current environment. Last February, Time magazine ran an article about the trouble with repeat cesarean sections. In it, I quote, "For many pregnant women in America, it is easier today to walk into a hospital and request major abdominal surgery than it is to give birth as nature intended." A woman named Jessica Barton was quoted in this article. She said she couldn't find an obstetrician in her county in California who will even let her try to have a VBAC. And she could locate only one doctor in the next county who allows the option of vaginal birth after cesarean. This woman planned to go to the UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles, which is 100 miles away from her home and can take 2 to 3.5 hours in traffic to get to that hospital. Interestingly enough, we do keep hearing about this too posh to push phenomenon, but the reality is that isn't the majority of women who are having C-sections today. Little attention has been paid to the vast number of mothers who are really being forced to have repeat C-sections. ICANN, or the International Cesarean Awareness Network, recently called almost 3,000 hospitals that have labor and delivery wards, and they found that 28% of them do not allow VBACs. Their latest findings note that another 21% of hospitals have what they call de facto bans, which means the hospitals have no official policies against VBACs, but no obstetricians at their hospitals will perform them. What's this VBAC lash about? Not so long ago, doctors were actually encouraging women to have VBACs, which cost much less than cesareans, allow mothers to heal more quickly, and have many other advantages. The big issue was about the risk of uterine rupture during a VBAC. And this risk is real, but it occurs in just 0.7% of cases. It's not completely insignificant, but the number of catastrophic cases is very, very low. Only 1 in 2,000 babies die or suffer brain damage as a result of oxygen deprivation. In 1999, after several high-profile cases in which women undergoing VBAC ruptured their uterus, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, or ACOG, changed its guidelines from stipulating that surgeons and anesthesiologists should be readily available during a VBAC labor to they need to be immediately available. Dr. Carolyn Zellop, who's co-author of ACOG's most recent VBAC guidelines, said that our goal wasn't to narrow the scope of patients who would be eligible, just to make it safer. But many hospitals and OBGYNs interpreted that revision to mean that surgical staff had to be present the entire time a VBAC client was at the hospital in labor. Now, when we think about New York City or major medical centers across the country, they're residents who staff labor and deliveries and can provide this kind of round-the-clock care all the time. But smaller hospitals typically rely on anesthesiologists to be on call. Doctors almost never sit by a woman throughout her entire labor, and so even they may be going to their offices or home to sleep, leaving nurses in charge of observing and watching to see how the woman's doing in labor. So even they aren't necessarily immediately available. Some doctors argue that any facility that's ill-equipped for VBACs shouldn't do any births at all. Dr. Mark Landon, a maternal fetal medical specialist at Ohio State University Medical Center, said, "How can a hospital say it can handle an emergency C-section due to any kind of stress in the baby in a normal labor and yet not be able to do a VBAC?" Good point. Part of the answer may have to do with malpractice insurance. In a 2006 ACOG survey of over 10,000 OBGYNs throughout the nation, 26% said they had given up on VBACs because insurance was unaffordable or unavailable, and 33% said they had dropped VBACs out of fear of litigation. One doctor is quoted as saying, "You never get sued for doing a C-section, but you can get sued for not doing a C-section." Nothing is more important in making a choice, especially a medical choice, than getting true informed consent. True informed consent involves a risk and benefit analysis. What are the risks of this procedure? What are the benefits of this procedure? And what are the risks of not having this procedure? What are the benefits of not having this procedure? So what's the bottom line with a C-section, especially a planned C-section? Without any question, compared with a vaginal birth, cesarean section increases a woman's risk for a number of physical problems. They may range from the less common but potentially life-threatening problems, including a hemorrhage, blood clots, and bowel obstruction, to the much more common concerns, such as longer-lasting and more severe pain and infection. Even after recovering from surgery, the scarring and adhesion tissue can increase the risk for ongoing pelvic pain and for a twisted bowel. If a woman has a cesarean, she's definitely more likely to stay in the hospital longer and is at greater risk of being rehospitalized. Some women who have a cesarean may be at greater risk for some emotional problems and to rate her birth experience as poorer than a woman who has had a vaginal birth. Some women who've had cesareans have initially negative feelings about their baby, mostly because of the less early contact she has with her baby, which may also pose challenges for getting breastfeeding underway. A baby who was born by cesarean is statistically less likely to be breastfed and get the benefits of breastfeeding. Babies are more likely to be cut during surgery. They might have some breathing difficulties around the time of birth, and they might even experience a higher risk of asthma in childhood and adulthood. There are definitely future reproductive potential problems for the mothers. The likelihood of experiencing some of these conditions goes up sharply as the number of cesareans increases. So somebody who's only having one baby with a cesarean may not encounter these problems, but somebody who's thinking of having many babies and repeats the cesarean with every single birth has a much higher likelihood of experiencing these problems. Ectopic pregnancies, pregnancies developing outside the uterus, reduced fertility, placental problems, previa where it attaches over the opening to her cervix, accreta where the placenta grows through the lining of the uterus, and the abruption where it detaches from the uterus before the baby's born. Some of the concerns about babies are that they're born too early when born by an elective cesarean section. They might weigh less than they should. Without doubt, though, a planned cesarean offers some advantages over an unplanned cesarean. For example, there may be fewer surgical injuries and fewer infections. And the emotional impact of a cesarean that's planned in advance appears to be similar or only slightly worse than an unplanned cesarean. What are some of the concerns about the effects of a vaginal birth on mothers? Because vaginal births are not risk-free as well. A woman who has a vaginal birth is more likely than a woman who has a cesarean to have a painful vaginal area in the weeks and months after birth. A woman who's had a vaginal birth is more likely than a woman who's had a cesarean to leak urine in the weeks and months after birth. A woman who's had a vaginal birth is more likely than a woman who's had a cesarean to have leakage of gas or very rarely feces. And for the baby, in comparison with a cesarean birth, a baby born by vaginal birth may be at higher risk for nerve injury that could affect the shoulder, the arm, or the hand. Although most of these injuries are temporary, some can be permanent. The differing advantages for both a cesarean section and for the choice of a vaginal birth are enormous. And in future programs, I'm really hoping to have women come to the program and talk about these options. But for now, thank you so much for listening. And write in any comments or questions to info@wgxc.org.